There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is KJ Live.
Yeah!
With Chris Johnson. And Chris is having conversations with influencers in the sports world and entertainment industry.
Hey, hey.
Now here's Chris Johnson.
You're now tuned in to KJ Live. Today's guest on the show is a graduate of Morningside High School and played for one of the greatest basketball teams in the history of Southern California. He also played at a high level at Washington State, then on to New Mexico State, and ended up playing pro for a few years in Israel, Austria, and other countries. Let's welcome in Dominic Ellison to the show. What's up, Dom?
Man, thank you for having me, brother. Everything is good.
Man, everything is great, bro. It's been a while since we've connected, bro. I talked to Stace Bozeman, your high school teammate, your boy, a few months back. He was on the show, man, so it was great to catch up with him. You actually came up on the podcast. It's nice to finally reconnect. Just got the news, man. LA Times front page, your name, the head coach of your alma mater, the legendary Morningside High School. Talk about what that means to you and what your mission is at Morningside.
It's all about the mission, and obviously it means a lot to me personally because, you know, it's rooted, it's rooted here. I was there, I was one of these young men trying to make it. So my initial and the most important mission here is giving back to the kids and helping them with that same opportunity that was kind of bleak for me. You know, hopefully I can bridge that gap between what they don't know, you know, now and what's ahead of them in the future. So, that's the main mission. The main mission is all giving back. You know, this isn't about anything else, but to help these young men and women and student athletes, you know, achieve their goals, their dreams. This is solely about that. And then on top of that, you know, going back home where it all started for me is really the magic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it has to be special, man. Morningside throughout history. So 30, 40, 50, 60 years has always been regarded as one of the top programs. My old college coach, Jim Herrick, used to coach at Morningside. A lot of people don't even know that back in the day. They were number one in the country with Jackie Robinson and all kind of dudes. And so a lot of people don't know that. And then we fast forward, and I'm sure there was guys in the 70s and 80s that I'm missing out, but the era that I remember most vividly was your era when the you guys had two movies, The Morningside Five, but Hardwood Dreams was the first one that came out, right? Or
yeah, so Hardwood Dreams number one happened in 93. We had just won the state in 92, brought some attention, and in 93 they came and grabbed a story. That was Hardwood Dreams one, and I'm really close to the producers now after all of this, and Mike Tollins is the producer. He actually did the Jordan story and, you know, did all kind of crazy good stuff. So he's a good friend of mine. He had this idea of doing it every 10 years. And he learned this from, a predecessor of his, you know. So he does it every 10 years. He came, around when we were 27 years old, you know, did the first one, we were 17, and he did 27. So that was Hardwood Dreams number two. And then, you know, when we were like around 37 years old is when the Morningside 5 show came out on ESPN and stuff like that. So it's been like 30 years of that particular production following us. And originally it was Spike TV, and then Fox picked it up, and then now ESPN picked it up. So there's some momentum there for the program, for the community. Obviously, they're interested in continuing that story now because I'm, you know, organically turning 47 pretty soon here. So that's the 10 years later after that. And it could be a special story, you know, landing the job and, you know, continuing the legacy of like you were talking about, guys like Jim Eric, guys like Carl Franklin, and then like a guy like me comes along. So it could be a good story. And to touch your point on Jim Herrick, man, you know, he recruited me because he was a coach. He recruited me, and I had really no idea that he was connected to the school. And it could have been a story at that point. I had no idea. Kind of, you know, piggyback what you're saying. Like, not many guys know Jim Herrick. You know, Eaglewood wasn't what it was today, you know. It was demographically different. It was culturally different back in the day.
Facts.
Now it was different. So Jim Herrick, technically in my lifetime, in my readings, he put Morningside on the map. What people fail to realize is he had Morningside having the number one team in the nation. I think they went on like a 45 game winning streak in the 70s, which obviously propelled his career. And then Carl Franklin basically came in after Jim Herrick, and Carl had guys like Byron Scott and Eldon Campbell. And then he coached obviously Stace Bozeman and myself and Dwight Curry and the whole Morningside Five and Corey and Sean. He had all of us for 20, 30 years. So these are two guys that has like really did some good things at the school and put the school on the map. And now it's my turn to see what I can do on the program, you know, put my print on the full program. So
absolutely, man. I appreciate that you giving us that breakdown. Playing for Coach Herrick at UCLA, he would always bring up Morningside High School. He always say, "Johnson, I bet you didn't know I coached at Morningside." I say, "What, coach?" He's like, "Yeah, we were number one in the country." I say, "What, coach?"
No one knows that. I mean,
that's so funny.
I mean, I'm kind of removed a little bit from the now generation. They don't know who the Morningside Five is. Some of these kids now, and I'm walking on campus, you know, they don't know. I mean, so I'm here to bring that back and bring that energy back and reestablish that culture.
Dom, take us back to where it all began, your childhood. I know you're an Inglewood guy. Were you born and raised in Inglewood? Where were you? What part of the city of Inglewood were you born?
So on paper, I was born in Los Angeles.
Okay.
But my family lived in what they had, what they call, you know, the lower bottoms.
The bottoms, facts.
Bottoms, right? It's where boys in the hood was shot and all that. So I was basically kind of born. I was created on Lawrence, which was in the bottoms, but basically born in Los Angeles. But yep. I was born and raised. I was raised, should I say, in Inglewood. You know, I went to Penn Q. Then I went to Warren Lane. You know, and then I did Hawthorne High School for my first 2 years because, you know, just like the movie, like Morningside was just too much for moms and dad to be like, yo, you're going to go over there, you're going to get into trouble. So I had to, they wanted some diversity, you know, obviously. So I went to Hawthorne High School for my first 2 years, 9th and 10th grade, played ball there. And then, you know, so ironically, Hawthorne played Morningside in that big Las Vegas tournament way back in the day.
Yeah.
And we were down by 30 at half. And I was playing against Stace Bozeman. All my friends were over there. All the other four were over there. And I'm just like, you know, dude, I'm like, we're down 30. And we end up losing that game by one. But to make a long story short, that next season, I was like, Mom, Dad, I got to go to Morningside. Like, this is basketball. Like, did you see they was alley-ooping on us? And I had to go there. And then the next season I went there, we ended up winning the championship, state championship. And that kind of sort of propelled, you know, a lot of my stuff. So I went to Benicute in Morningside, Hawthorne in Morningside. And then after that, you know, I earned a scholarship to play for Kelvin Sampson at Washington State.
Let's stay on Morningside for a second. I had a couple of questions about your experience there. When we want to set the stage so that our audience, my audience, can understand what the climate of high school was like in early 90s Los Angeles. For me, I was a Crenshaw. So first I started off Montclair Prep. Then my dad had this genius idea after my sophomore year. We're living in Bel Air, Dom. He's talking about, man, you need to go to Crenshaw if you want to get recruited by D1. Because back then, Dom, you remember small schools. We didn't have that. Didn't have the respect. Nowadays, you can go high level. You can go straight to the league out of a small school. Back then, folks used to look at your level of competition. So Pops was like, yo, go to Crenshaw. So I wasn't really tripping, but I was kind of like, yo, what's up with this? What was Morningside like around the same time? Because I know Crenshaw, we had metal detectors on the way in, bro. We getting patted down.
Hey, man. I mean, I would say that we were on the other side, literally, right?
Yep.
On the other side of Crenshaw. It was the same exact thing going on. Like, you know, you couldn't enter the game without law enforcement with metal detectors. It was serious. Off the court had a lot to do with you even making it to practice. And you know, we were just different. We were tougher. It was a little bit different. I mean, I don't even think we were tougher than I feel like some of the children are today, but our dads and them was even tougher than us.
You know
what I'm trying to say here? You know, it was a different era, man. It was a lot more distractions with gangs, with survival in the inner city, which is, you know, they use the word bullying today. Like, I mean, what? Like,
it wasn't. That was the way. And that's what I tell folks about today, like how this bullying stuff. I'm like, man, I wish I would have grew up. Man. Just you wake up, you walking out the house and somebody go say something to you that can be considered bullying, but you had to have thick skin and know how to respond.
You had to mature really fast and control your emotions. Okay.
Yeah.
Get your emotions intact. You know, you have to understand the psychological part of what's going on here. And then you have to make a decision whether you was going to go that way or not. The support systems from your pops, you know, Marcus and all of our pops, the Baileys, the Murrays, you know, the Ellis, our support system had to be extremely strong for us not to go in. And we dabbled, all of us. We all kind of broke a window, or we all kind of like grabbed a pistol and thought about it. Like, okay, wait, you know, I got to make a decision. But those support systems, you know, was in place for us, and we were fortunate. A lot of kids didn't have some of those support systems, and they drifted, too far. You know what I mean? So the challenges then, like you're talking about, you know, I mean, you know, on the campus of Morningside, and no offense to Morningside, because I'm representing Morningside. I mean, it was like a little yard for a minute. You know, you don't walk that way.
Oh yeah.
And don't look that way. You know, you just look straight and you go to practice and you just stay out of that kind of stuff. These days, kids have their different challenges, you know, social media and, you know, being, you know, extrovert or whatever they're into now, it's different. They have different stuff to think about. When we were in school, you know, we had to focus on something to not focus on something, which was the other stuff, you know, gangs, drugs, ditching school, all that kind of stuff was prevalent. And we all had an outlet. If we didn't have that outlet of bouncing the basketball and that support system connected, we probably would have drifted as well. So, you know, but kudos to the support systems.
And to stay on that topic of support systems, the Baileys and the Murrays and all these fathers, my dad, everybody that you mentioned, they kind of kept us in check. But it was almost by it wasn't a direct keeping you in check, but it was just like you just had these people that had expectations of you. And so you knew, like, you know, if you saw Mr. Murray, you, next time you saw him, you wanted to be, you know, in better shape than it was, or you wanted to look better. And, you know, Mr. O'Bannon, whoever it was, like these were people that you actually, I would leave and think about because they were affecting my life. I feel like it's gotten away from that a little bit. I feel like people nowadays, and I don't want to get too deep into this topic, but people nowadays, they take, you know, you have your own little unit of support and that's it. They ain't messing with these guys, dad. They ain't messing with this guy, dad, because his dad might be trying to get him to play on my team and all this other stuff. So politics.
It's different, man. It came too far down.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like the NBA at the sixth grade level already. And
facts.
You know what I mean?
Facts.
It is. It's like a snatch and grab. And what I want to preach and what I'm trying to do, and I got to lead by example, right? Because I'm getting into this deep and I'm putting, you know, my name, my reputation, things I've built on the line because I want to make some changes. You know, until we understand that aligning ourselves together as mentors, as colleagues, and not trying to take from one another, we can build these communities back up. But if we are fighting and not being transparent and not trusting one another, then we can't expect our next generations to be any better than what we're doing, you know? And I'm getting into mentoring, I'm getting into tutoring, I'm getting into like community activist stuff because, you know, it's my time. And if I can use my small name or voice in the community, let's do it. And things like this help, right? Because we can reach populations. But until we mend together in these communities, we're colleagues, we're brothers, we've been doing this. Let's try to come together and align ourselves and not trying to, you know, be shady and do shady stuff. Let's tell the truth. Let's work on it. Let's be, you know, productive. And that's kind of how we change this stuff. So, you know.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I think also Dom is just realizing how our power or our influence, or and not being cocky about it or anything like that, but understanding that we do affect how this next generation sees things, thinks about stuff. They're looking to us for, you know, guidance at times. And so being a mentor takes a lot of, there's a lot of responsibility associated with that. But I feel like as guys like us, basketball players that grew up in certain type of situations, we know all the right things to do. Now, whether or not we've done them is a whole nother story, but tell you what, we know facts. We know what to tell these kids. We know what to tell them to keep them on the right track.
That's right.
And I'm very, I'm proud, pleased to hear that you're taking it upon yourself to give back, because you had a career in business that I need you to just kind of talk to us about. You, for the last 10, 15 years, you're working in the business space. Talk a little bit about what made you decide to transition from the corporate America into high school basketball coaching.
You know, that's a really good and touchy subject. Number one, you know, as a sports athlete and as a professional athlete, we all have these like dreams. These dreams know, dreams don't really die, right? They just stay alive. And, you know, one of my dreams was to always be able to like run my own business, because, you know, coming from the inner city, you know, one of the things you kind of, you know, internalize is like, yo, you know, if I sit at the top, I can make the most money. It kind of just straight ahead with that, right? Like, so it's like, you know, being a basketball player, and we didn't make half the money. We didn't have an opportunity to make half the money that these guys are making today. And when your dad and all of them was playing, I mean, it was a fraction. So you still have this dream about being successful. And with that, it's like fame and like being good at something, you know, making a little bit of money, you know, putting your legacy on something. And I always wanted to do that. So, you know, when I decided to unlace my shoes, and at 27 years old, I did a little earlier than a lot of people. You know, my last season, I was like, you know, I wanted to make the NBA. And I thought that the path with going overseas or playing in the CBA, ABA, you know, workouts, individual private workouts, whatever was going on, you know, whether it be with the Clippers or the Jazz, we had all these runs. And I thought about it and I said, you know, every summer I come back, I really don't have anything solid. You know, I have to wait till August to see where this thing takes me. Every year I was like, I don't know. Moms would say, what are you going to do next year? I'm like, I don't know. I'm actually waiting for a call, right? We're all waiting for that call.
Yep.
And that call comes in and you may not like that first call, but you don't know if there's a second or third call, and you have to make that decision fast. It might be leaving at 6 a.m. the next damn day, and I can't even say bye to anybody. So that kind of started to dwell on, you know, hey, I need some security in life. I started to mentally mature a little bit, and I said, you know what, I want to switch gears. And it's very difficult to switch gears from basketball to a business professional.
Yes, sir.
And It took some grind, Chris. It really, really, really challenged me mentally. It actually helped me to how I, you know, to figure out who I am, because we all got to figure that out, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I went back and got my undergrad because I thought I would make it in basketball. It was a few credits short at New Mexico State. Went back, finished that in 2005. And then I said, you know, I gotta find something substantial. What is that? You know, I started researching stuff, which is the hardest part, coming from, you know, no experience.
Yeah.
With no job.
It's a whole new industry. It's a whole new industry that you don't even know what time it is. You got to find out everything from scratch, bro. You got to learn it all.
People are asking me, what are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't even know what I can do, Chris. I don't know. I don't even know what these job titles mean. You know, to be a director of operations, like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of scattered research, you know, talking to a small business administration, learning this, or how do you start this? Or what's an LLC? And I mean, it got just pieces floating from everywhere. And I said, no. I got to go back to school to learn this the right way, because that's my base. That's my platform. So I went back at 38 to get my master's in business and finance. That's when I was able to say, okay, I can now have conversations in the corporate world about certain subjects.
And it's just because you felt confident that you had a grasp of the information. Could this have been something, Dom, that you could have also learned though through mentorship or working, you know, in corporate America? Or did you specifically need to go back and learn from school?
These are excellent questions. These are excellent questions, because had I did this at 25, yes, I could have went through the corporate mentorship. Mm-hmm, I was at 38, time was ticking, and I was like, yeah. I need it now.
Yeah.
So I took the route of not depending on how slow it, I needed deadlines. So I know if I finish this in 2 years, I can now do this. Mm-hmm. So time wasn't on my side. And that's an excellent question, because that's why I took the route, because I needed it now. And I'm not a young puppy, you know, I don't have the time to get that 10 years experience and catapult up the ladder. Like, mm-hmm. I needed to come in with some sort of impact. Mm-hmm. And the degree was one thing, but then there was a lack of experience. Yes. So I still had to start from the bottom.
Yeah.
But I was an athlete. ex-athlete, and you know, I was very competitive, and I paid attention to detail, you know, and that's why I felt I was a really good basketball player, because I did all the little things. And I ended up working my way up at this firm. I created a sports division to, like, you know, manage athletes, money at the firm. Like, it was going great. And I said, you know what? You know, I'm making decent money, but my passion wasn't there. So I branched off and did my own thing. And I did that for 10 years. So I managed money, did all the reporting, did all the financial work, all the business management affairs for clients, you know, built a bio and did that for 10 years. And that's what I've been doing, basically. Now I'm selling half the business, and I'm just going to concentrate on basically just getting distributions from the work I put in, you know, equity in the business. So I'm taking a step back in leadership. I'm not going to be the CEO anymore. Basically, I sit on the board as a chair and an advisor. It's kind of like a retirement kind of thing. But now I want to get active in the community. You know, I want to get active in the community. I want to get active in sports. I want to get back. So that's kind of like a, you know, a slope up and then kind of sort of a plateau out. So I've been doing that for about 10, 12 years now. I left that firm in 2010. And I've been independent, doing my own stuff for about 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, when I saw you, they featured you. I think it was on the Morningside 5 one where, you know, they were showing you kind of in the office hanging out with your colleagues and just the banter, bro. Like, I know you. And then look, we all chameleons. Okay. We all chameleons, and me and you specifically have always been able to be chameleons. Like, probably not a lot of dudes can in our era. I'm just going to keep it 100 with you. Okay. Yeah. So to see it, and like, just you was doing it, I forgot what you were doing, but it resonated with me. So like, and this is going to sound like some nerdy shit, Don, but this, like, you created an Excel sheet. And you did something on the Excel. You were color coded, and you had formulas, or you did something real fly. Yeah. Bruh, when I first learned how to do that, I felt like, and I didn't learn how to do it till I was 38, 39. I felt like the man. I had a wetter from 50. You feel like the man when you create a bomb ass Excel sheet.
Yes.
You don't understand. I'm watching it though. I'm like, ah, look at that. I'm geeking out over your Excel sheet, bruh. I swear I was on it.
I was proud as hell.
Everybody in the office was like, hey, look what Don made. Look what Don did.
You know, look, I was the only brother in the entire firm. The only brother in the firm that worked on accounts. The other brothers were in different areas of the firm, but they didn't work on the accounts, which is the money, you know, maybe file room or, you know, other services, should I say. And very, very cool story is how I got that job is coaching at Brentwood High School. You never know how things happen. I was an assistant coach at Brentwood High School and met a gentleman that went to Brentwood, and, you know, he was coaching pro bono, didn't need any stipend or anything like that. And through our season, we became like really, really close. And I'm talking about like opposite cultures here.
Absolutely.
100% opposite cultures. You know, Morningside High School, Brentwood School, like totally opposite. And he learned a lot from me, from my culture. And I learned a ton from him and his culture. And I was like, you know, life after basketball, in transition of what I'm going to be doing next, you know, kind of staying attached to it, but not really like full on like I'm going to be now. And I was reaching out to resources, say, hey, man, you know, I need a job. You know, I'm trying to do this. I'm in school at the time. I was in my master's program. And I was like, you know, if you could make a call to anyone, I was just hungry. And he made a call to his cousin who knew the boss or a partner in charge at the firm that I ended up working for. And he made the connection, and I waited for 2 years, and the guy that connected me with the partner in charge gave me a call and said, you know, are you still in the market? And I said, yes. And he said, when can you start? And I said, tomorrow. And he hired me. And that guy has been a mentor in my life. He's become my business partner. He's becoming a investor in my business. I worked under him for 7 years. And then now he became a partner in my company, raised millions of dollars for my business. And now I have that resource. And his name is Ken Coelho. He works at the firm Armanino. So through these small connections, man, you know, and if you keep your head on straight and you build, you know, some things happen. And, you know, that job, my only job, came through a relationship through basketball. So you just never know what happens in this world. You just got to be ready and you got to keep going up. So I'm blessed. And I only tell that story because, you know, the last 10 years of my life has been a tribute to that small connection at Brentwood and that friend of mine who's still friends today that helped propel me and, like, you know, help me in my life, man. So that's a touchy one for me because it came through a very, very small window, but yeah. It impacted my life for the last 15 years.
Oh yeah, man. Sometimes the things that impact you the most, they don't seem like they're a big deal at first. I mean, I had a situation that I got involved with in 2011 with the tech company out of Sausalito, California, but I met the guy through Steve Lavin. I happened to be working Lav's camp, basketball camp out in New York. This guy had an iPad, an iPhone app he was trying to get off. You know, you can do the digital scouting, take photos, audio, man, the whole nine, you know, shoot it up to the cloud, you know, down, print out reports, PDFs, shot charts. So he's trying to sell Lav on becoming sort of like a spokesman for this or endorse the product or whatever. So Lav wanted me to come along because I had in 2008, I had tried to develop an iPhone video game with a company called Artificial Life out of Hong Kong. So we had T.O., Manny Pacquiao, we, you know, all in talks to make some games. So I had to do a bunch of just downloading of research in my brain about, you know, Apple, the Apple code, the iPhone, what time it was, how it worked. So anyway, I'm well-versed when by the time this meeting comes with this guy, his name by the guy by the name of Greg. Greg is impressed. I have a command on everything he's talking about. This dude hires me. I worked for him for 7.5 years after that, Dom. Traveled all over the country with him. Went to the MIT conference, Sloan Sports Analytics Conference several times, bruh. But just to your point about these small connections through basketball, it's like if you're at the right place and at the right time and you understand how to deal with people in a positive way, you can get far. And that's one of the things that as a mentor, one of my first things I talk to kids about, man, it's how to nourish, cultivate, and maintain lifelong relationships with folks, man.
It is. It really is. And, you know, I learned that late. I can't lie.
Me too, bro.
I really did. Like, I really learned that late. And that's okay. You know, once you learn it, you just hone it, you know?
Yeah.
But that's like, you know, that's part of the message, you know, of giving back in the community and like telling these kids how important, you know, because I still got, I mean, I'm sure you got all these relationships for 20, 30 years. I mean, look how we could do it. You know, we could
pick for sure.
Yesterday. You know, if I seen your pops out and it's just like yesterday, these relationships don't really go anywhere. They just maintain that value. And it, like you said, it can take you a long way, man. So I'm blessed to have that happen. And then, you know, being in this situation is a big deal for me, so I can pass along some of the stuff that we've been through. I mean, you know, if it ain't us, you know, it's the next one. So it might as well be us. So,
yeah, I think teaching these kids about just insane work ethic is a good start because, you know, work ethic takes care of a lot of things. You know, you can cover up a lot of just, you know, deficiencies, inefficiencies or whatever. But if your ass is there, you clocking in and you doing them 12, 14 hours every day, consistency, it's going to be a level of respect for you that others won't get.
Yeah.
But I wanted to find out something. So Kelvin Sampson recruited me heavy at Washington State. Okay. He was rocking with me. He was rocking with my game. He was calling me all the time. I love that dude. I wanted to go because I loved him. I was curious how, not about the basketball part, because I always got a sense about Kelvin from a basketball's perspective, but I was always curious about how he handled you guys off the court as a coach. How was your experience playing for him? Off the court.
Yeah. You know, I was 17 and, you know, when you are battling, understanding who you are and someone challenges you, you don't know if it's for the good or bad, right? But what you do, what Coach did instill is, from a basketball perspective, is, you know, you kind of like had to either love or hate the dude, because he was gonna get in your stuff. he demanded, and he didn't get this while you were, like, you know, when he's talking to you, you don't really get it like that because you're young, you're trying to figure it out. But all he really, really, truly wanted you to do from a basketball perspective was to play your hardest. And you know how hard that is to get out of a young man when he thinks he's nice.
Yeah, for sure.
And he wants to turn it on when he wants to turn it on.
Yeah.
Coach is going, look, I get it, but that doesn't work here. You surrender. You have to surrender to me as a coach. And excuse me, as a player, you have to surrender to me as a coach, because there's no other way. And if you could, as a young man, you know, learning your emotion, you battle that. You're like, man, hold on, man, why are you always on my head? You know, why are you always on my back? You know, yeah. I didn't breathe. But no, what he was doing is bringing out the best in you, because if you don't play hard, we won't know ever. And it's not a light switch. So on the basketball court, what Kelvin did is he brought the best out of us, because he demanded us to play hard. If you watch Houston University today, they play hard.
They play hard, bro.
They may not do a whole lot of stuff on offense. Coach, don't kill me here, Coach, if you hear this. They don't do a whole lot of stuff like other programs on offense, but you look at that rebounding category or loose ball category. Plus 20 on guys. They play hard. That's really their bread and butter. Now, that got confused with off the court, because you didn't know if the dude liked you or loved you, because you were still in your feelings. You was like, yeah. Oh, I don't know if I should approach this dude. I'm kind of still mad at him because he made me run, or he was talking about how soft I was, which we can't do these days.
Yeah.
So, but then people tell you, when a coach stops talking to you,
that's when you need to be worried. Yeah, that's when you need to be worried, bro.
So he was always talking to me.
Yeah,
he cared. He cared. And I was a little young because I only had Kelvin for 1 year.
Then Kevin Eastman came, or who, Kevin Eastman. all right.
But it feels like I played for Kelvin for 4 years.
Wow.
I talked to Kelvin last week.
Oh.
You know, Kelvin at 46, I love Kelvin because now I get it.
Yeah.
He is better off the court than he is on the court because he cares. And you can't really put those together from a basketball perspective at 17 and off the court, because you're like, watch out, dude. You know, it's like, you know, like your parents say, oh, go talk to your teacher after class, right?
Yeah.
Build a relationship with the teacher, you'll learn more. And you're like, I'll talk to my teacher. It was the same thing with Kelvin. So I want to stay farthest away from him when I was younger, because I felt I'm mad at this dude. You know, if this dude's gonna talk some shit. But as you grow older, you know, if you look at his staff today, they all us. They all like, if you know, like you was coaching, yeah, you was coaching, you would be with her, you would be with Lavender, you would be whoever you were with. And
for sure,
he's a family dude. He takes care of his own. He cares about his players. All of us have relationships with Kelvin. And I only had 1 year with him. And it feels like I've been with the dude for 4 years. He claims, you know, that I was the best point guard he's ever had, regardless of whoever went to the NBA or not. He just feels in his heart that I was one of his best point guards, which is a tribute and an honor for me, because he's a Hall of Famer. So that was the thing. Like, off the court, the dude is like, his heart is huge for his dudes. You know what I mean? He's really a true dude. And, you know, and I'm pleased and honored to say that. You know, I can call Coach right now and, you know, and it's like a mentor. It's like a big brother. It's like an uncle. Like he'll do anything in his power to help and assist and support when a lot of guys may not pick up the phone. You know, they're too big. He's big time now. You know, he's big time. He's different than he was when he was coaching at Washington State. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, yeah.
He's really earned his position. He's made some decisions and, you know, it's cost him in certain places. But, you know, we all got to pick up and keep it rolling. And I'm proud of Coach.
Absolutely. Glad to see him get a second chance. And this time around, he's really shocked me.
He got Houston popped.
He shocked the hell out of me. And I knew Houston had the resources, and I knew Houston was like an up-and-coming situation, but I did not realize they was going to be in the Final Four last or 2 years ago, whenever they made it. And then last year, they looked great in the tournament. Big time job by Coach Sampson.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Now, after Washington State, you went to New Mexico State and played for a year. Then you finished in New Mexico, and now you're on the NBA radar, and you're looking at playing professionally. How far did the NBA journey take you? Did you hit a training camp? Were you playing an exhibition season? And then how important was it to you personally to make the league?
You know, so I'll take it back. Like, you know, I was my sophomore year, I led the pack in assists.
Mm-hmm.
And that I felt was like the hottest time of my career.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. Although I went on to play pro and I had a cup of tea in the league and the workouts, I think the hottest time of my career was during that sophomore season. And I'd had 3 individual workouts on campus at Washington State. And the first was the Supersonics because they were the closest to the campus. And Casey came down and worked me out with Tim, what was Tim's last name?
Gergovich.
Had me like, I mean, he was the workout king at that time. So
yeah,
I really got a taste, you know, but I was only like 18. I had just turned 18 as a sophomore. I was young because I was young. And I had Tim and Casey, and they put it on me. And then I was like, oh shit, like this is a different level. So that was the first workout. And then I had another workout by Utah. And then I had a workout by the Spurs. All in the same like 3-week, 4-week span. And they worked me and Isaac Fontaine out, and Mark Hendrickson.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of like our thing. And 3 different positions, you know, and we had the workouts. So that I felt was the hottest. And then I transferred. And then when I transferred, I felt like, okay, now I'm in my right class because I was up a season. I wasn't supposed to be in 93. I was supposed to be 94. So then I went to New Mexico State. I had an okay season. I got newcomer of the year, but it wasn't the pack. It was different playing against Jason Kidd and Tyus and Brevin and Stace and Cameron Murray. And, you know, it was just a different echelon.
Yeah.
And I did okay, but I didn't think it was powerful enough to get drafted. Right. So, you know, I did what everybody else did, got an agent, and I was told, okay, you might be in the second, late second rounder. If not, you know, we have these trade agreements and we can get you into camp and all that kind of like secondary stuff. So it wasn't just a clear dom, you're going to get drafted. And a lot of us had to do that. So after that, once I realized I wasn't going to, you know, walk in there, I was like, okay, what's plan B? And I was talking to a lot of guys that were similar in that similar position of, you know, on a borderline of making it to the NBA, but then there's still life after, you know, there's still a career here. And they were telling me, look, you know, you need to concentrate on, you know, making a substantial amount of money over a period of time. You know, it's not the NBA route, but now you're a professional. You know, you can go overseas or you can try to stay in the minor leagues. And my decision, like other people, was like, you know what? I don't want to go to, because we only had the CBA at the time. It wasn't like the D League. It wasn't like the G League. It wasn't like
all this other stuff. Yeah.
We had the CBA.
That's it.
And the CBA was paying, you know, $200-$300 a week for our max. And I was like, dude, I felt like I needed to do more than that. So I went overseas and I got a first opportunity in Israel.
Right. How was that? How was that experience in Israel?
Israel was, you know what, man, we didn't have Google. We didn't have YouTube. So I had to pick up a damn encyclopedia. Classic. I had to pick up
the Britannica, whatever.
I was going, you know what I mean? You know, moms had them all stacked up.
Yeah,
you know,
all stacked, bro.
They had them all stacked. And I was like, well, where's this place at? And I had to pick it up. And that was like old pictures. So I had no idea exactly what was going on. So when I got there kind of learned the history, the culture, because Israel's deep. Learned the culture, you know.
Yeah.
That's when my exposure went to like another level. It was like, wow, okay, you know, here's America, but like, wow, here's customs different over here. There's the culture's different over here. The values are different, you know.
Oh yeah.
And then there was, you know, all these beautiful women in Israel that we have no idea what goes on in all these places. The Mediterranean Sea is there.
Yeah.
You know, it's 85 degrees. You can see to the bottom of the water. And then, you know, there, there's the people look different. I mean, it was hot.
It's cracking. Really, okay. Really
hot. The nightclub is hot. You know, it was like, yeah. And they spoke English.
Yes.
They spoke English in Israel. And I was just like, that's like one of the best kept secrets.
I know.
So to this day, I took a lot of what I learned that first year in Israel, and I internalized that because they're, you know, they got strong culture. You know, they got strong religion. They got some real good values. And try to, you know, come over here where we're at and instill those. So that was my first gig. And then I left there. I actually like did really good in like one of these like tournaments. And then one of the agents or sponsors from a team in Austria was like, we'll pay you to get out of this contract and come to Austria and play for us. And I was just like, this is it. So I left that team and went to Austria.
How was Austria? It's next to Germany, right?
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So Austria was a different beast. It was slower than Israel. Like I was like, yo, what did I just do? Like I was just popping, and now I'm not. It was a lot more structured. A lot more. It was historical. The people with Deutsch, you know, it was different. It was cold, you know, it was freezing cold. Now it's like, I felt like I was back in Pullman, Washington, where the,
but you was ready for that.
I could do it, but like, I was just like, yo, I thought I was in Cali. I was just in Cali in Israel, you know, but then I was like, yo, back to the snow. So it was cool. The basketball was very good. We had some really good goods, and I enjoyed it. I became, you know, one of the, you know, locals, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I became a part of their community. And again, another good learning experience, man. And I enjoyed my time. We ended up winning the championship there.
Nice.
That's when I kind of got like my fever again. I was like, yo, you know, you win a championship in Europe, you might get a look. These days, you win a championship lure, you might get a look in the league.
Oh, absolutely. Back then, it was a little tougher. They weren't in the building as much as they are now.
The game, right. You're right. We were coming through that era where it was very athletic.
Yeah.
Everything just went from fundamentals and skills to just raw athleticism. And that was that transition from, you know, the Norm Nixons and the Magics and then it went to like the guys that could just bounce, the Vince Carters and, you know, all these
kind of guys. The bounce.
It was a bounce era. And you remember that, right? I mean, guys
yes.
Take layups, guys couldn't pull up jump shot, guys couldn't dribble with their left hand, but they could jump. And they were long. So the game changed. And nowadays we kind of lost a little bit. I feel personally, it's me personally, kind of feel like we lost a little bit of skill set. And now that's why we got a lot more Europeans in our league, because they have less athleticism and more
fundamentals. Absolutely.
You see them being able to compete now, and not to knock their athleticism, but they play the game differently. And you know that for a fact, because you played.
And yeah, but anytime a guy like Jokic and Doncic can dominate the NBA, Jokic and Doncic are the two most dominant dudes. They be serving dudes.
Serving dudes.
And they make you look bad. Jokic will give you 50, 18, and 16, dog, against whoever you putting over there. Giannis, it don't matter. Yeah. It's like, how? It trips me out, but I think it's a credit to what you're saying. It's an IQ. Also associated with with their game too. Like they have an advanced IQ. They were taught certain principles about the game that weren't necessarily as emphasized with us. And I think that you said it perfectly. That's why they've caught up so quickly and are now dominating the league.
Yes.
But after Austria, so you win a championship in Austria. Yep. How old, you're about what, 24?
25? No, so I was, about 24 when I won that championship.
But you retired 3 years later. What happened in between Austria and retirement?
So I went back to Ramadan, back to Israel for a short period. And then I was supposed to go to Spain to play. And then it was that call situation again. It was like, hey, we're trying to negotiate. A little bit more money, but you got this window. And Austria had called me back again saying, we want you back. Because I left Austria to go to try to, you know, make some money. I think I played in the IBL. Sorry. After Austria, I played, this is so long ago. After Austria, I played in the IBL for the Des Moines Dragons.
Oh, wow.
With that, like, idea of staying local, staying in the States, and being brought up for a 10-day. And, you know, Stace was doing that. Guys was doing that. And I was like, all right, I just won a championship. My name is ringing. I'm actually putting up, like, 30, 40 in the Long Beach Summer Leagues. You know, I'm like, this was my hot time after college. And I ended up playing the IBL for a year thinking that I would get, brought up for a 10-day. I did that for a whole year. We actually went to the championship. I think we lost championship or something like that. But then after that, that's when I went back overseas. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to the NBA. I'm 25 years old. And if I had not made it after I won a championship in Europe, it's probably not going to be my thing. So I had a couple tryouts again for the Lakers. I had tryouts for, I think it was like the Lakers and the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
And I at that time, you know, like you were talking about earlier is, you know, you and I have a different, you know, mindset about how we pick up on things. And my antennas went up and I go, okay, even if I do get a cup of coffee in the NBA, I'm not going to be playing minutes.
Mm.
I'm going to be on a practice squad. I'm going to be, you know, sort of, you know, in the background. I'm like, I don't know if I want that. I basically want to continue learning myself and going overseas, being there for 8 months by yourself. You learn yourself.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know, I'm just going to finish my career overseas. So I did that, went back to Austria for another 2 years. And, my last year, I came back and played in the ABA for the, I don't want to say the LA Stars or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Something like that.
That's it.
And then after that, I was like, I'm not going back overseas. So that's when I was like, fuck, I'm going back to school. And I think I went back to school to get my undergrad in psychology in 2004. And that was a wrap.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like my journey. You know, I played, you know, 3 or 4 years overseas, something like that, 5 years overseas, and then a couple of minor league years, and figured out, like, you know, I need to, like, establish myself in America. Like,
absolutely.
I'm coming home in the summers, you know, like everybody else, bringing as much cash money as you can back home. But I don't have, like, a residence. You know, I'm like, you know, living with moms or, you know, like trying to, you know, live with a chick for that period of time until I'm back. And that got played out.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, it just got.
Yeah. You get tired of that. You get tired of that.
I need a life. I need to be established. Where am I living at? You know, I need a woman. Like, you know what I mean? I started to think about life.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I cut it short and went back to school, man. And then, you know, as we touched on earlier, that kind of started my journey.
Man, being overseas, there's always that level of loneliness that takes over when you, especially when you are gone for extended periods of time and you have all this time to be thinking about yourself and learning yourself and basically free time to do nothing but time to kill. That's it. You got time to kill till next practice, till next meal, whatever it is. So yeah. In Qatar, I learned a lot about myself over the course of 4 years, you know, playing over there overseas. And then I also realized when I got back home, just how far behind in certain areas, man, because everybody's, you know, let's like the workforce, and you touched on it earlier. You got your degree, but no experience. And they want experience. If you just like a guy that just came out of college. So like they looking at you, man, you ain't got no mentorship. Like you ain't did an internship, man. You was playing basketball. Like, how does that kind of trend? And that's the same things I ran into where lack of job experience equated to being passed over for opportunities. But once, like you talked about that 1 foot in the door. Hey, that 1 foot in the door, bro.
Kick it open.
And that's a testament to us and folks that are cut from the cloth that we are, that all we need is an opportunity. Okay, and to get in these rooms that we so-called couldn't handle and don't know how to whatever. Okay, put me there, and let's see how that's going to end up. And I think, Dom, you're a perfect example of that type of situation, my brother. Was there any moment during the retirement when you're so young and back in school, was there any moment that you said, man, I kind of want to get back out there? Were you still playing pickup? Were you still staying in shape? Did anything come up to where you kind of had to make another serious choice in life? Okay, talk to me.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't done.
Yeah.
Physically. I was done physically and emotionally.
Mm.
Mentally, I was done because, you know, I had not achieved what I was set out to do. And that's what I busted my butt to do was to, you know, I made every meeting, I made every gym. What I did not do, and I can live with it, is I didn't do as much as I should have done when it comes to, like, you know, the little things, like touching the line, drinking milkshakes, not partying. I didn't do that. So I wasn't rewarded. All right? I slacked because I thought I was good. I thought I could turn it on.
Yeah,
so I can now, you know, a lot of us have to live with some of this. And we got to understand, like, did you really truly do everything?
That's a great way to put it.
You know what I mean? And you can fool yourself by saying yes, but I saw and I know guys that they did more than I did. They weren't as talented. They may not have been as good, but they were. Because they did all that other stuff. When I just kind of kept it at a certain level. And kudos to them, but that's kind of like the maturity, right? So I had some days where I was 27 years old, 28 years old, and I would go and play around or play with guys that were still doing it. Stace was still doing it. I would go to the real run and play in the real run. And guys would be like, Dom, you can go right now. And I'm like, I'm tired of hearing that. Guys like BD, you know, got Dom, like, yo, like, BD is my dude. Like, you was the kid, Paul. Like, all these guys, like, man, you can go now. And I'm like, I'm tired of hearing that. You know what I mean? I'm just here to hoop because I love to hoop. But, like, I've checked out.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens, man.
Time I was like, you know what? I can go get a contract and make some money right now. And yeah. Just throw this mindset out the window and get back to this. But then I was like, nah, you know, I've come too far with making the decision to quit, to stop, not quit, but to stop. And that was challenging, man, because I know guys that continue to do it until they were 37. And I had a 10-year head start on them in terms of what you were talking about, transitioning into real life. You know, being able to do Excel, being able to search and use a computer in today's society. I mean,
yes, bro. Attach a PDF to an email.
we take those things for granted because we bounced and we was rocking and we competed and we worked on our bodies, you know, and we worked on our mind. We worked on our image. You know, we worked on our persona to the media. I mean, we were entertainers. So we had to transition to, you know, doing different skills, you know. You know, guys that didn't stop when I stopped, when they did stop at a later age, they had to do the same things I did. So, you know, I just made a decision to unlace mine a little earlier and to get into the real world. Like, I had no idea about, you know, interest rates, real estate. Like, I'm real estate illiterate at the time. Like, I couldn't have conversations with adults that, yeah. You know, tax returns, writing this off.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Write it. What are you talking about? What do you mean?
My hotel room. People wash my laundry. I don't do that kind of stuff. I don't book my rental cars. That was like a lost skill. And And then when you hang it up, you're like, oh, I gotta do everything myself now. I don't even know what is this. And so that, you know, with that, like you said earlier, Chris, was a big one. The confidence. As I started to learn more and get more confident in the real world, it allowed me to go out and raise money, start a business, do what you're doing. Like, yeah. I had to learn how to walk again after sports, is how I kind of put it. So,
so true.
Like you're saying, attach a PDF, like, that was a mystery.
Hey, it sounds easy, but
it sounds like people in the business world who have been working since they were 18, 19 years old, and we didn't.
Yeah.
Like, what? Attach a PDF? Like, that's.
Yeah. They'll laugh at you. Save.
Yeah. So that's been like the advantage, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
And I think that your competitive nature, our competitive nature as athletes come out when we get placed in those corporate settings, because what you realize about the corporate setting is, yeah, I work with a bunch of white dudes and white women too. I was the only brother, but they all wanted to be athletes. They all had a drive. They all was competitive more than me about stuff. They know about everything. Like in my particular situation, I was surrounded by people that were sports heads. So the culture was always, we're trying to beat each other on sales, on this. We're trying to beat each other a month in. Who's getting the bonus? We got five tickets to the Giants game, but whoever sells the most this month. Stuff like that. And so now I'm getting geeked because I'm like, wait a minute, now we can have a little fun. And I think that's the part where our athletic prowess comes out as adults and while you're working in that type of setting. But make no mistake about it, bro. When I first started and had to relearn everything, teach myself how to walk again, it takes hours and hours and hours of studying, research, knowledge, soaking up YouTube videos, soaking up how to do. I was Mr. How to Do. I'm not asking nobody because I'm embarrassed, Dom. I'm embarrassed. I don't want to ask a grown person, how do I, Dom.
I don't know if it's like a stupid question. Are you supposed to know this? I gotta go. Yeah, I get it.
I was right there too, bro.
A lot of us are, and some of us, you know, are not coming out with that. And they probably, it's the trust in yourself. Like, you know, some people don't grow up with that trust and that and exposure. You know, some people don't grow up with exposure. So they're scared to say, I don't know what you mean. You know, you can use a word and I'm sitting there like going, shaking my head. Yes. But I have no clue. And if I have a trust in me, I'm going to say, hey, hold on, Chris, what does that word mean? And I'm not afraid for you to judge me if I don't know that. So a lot of us sports athletes have to cross that barrier, you know, find out and saying, like, I don't know what that means, man. Or I need some help.
Yeah.
I need some help, you know?
Yeah.
So I've had to experience that. And now it's a part of me. It's like, I wish I would have known that when I was a little younger. Like, we always do that. You know, I wish I'd have known how big resources was. And, you know, that old saying about ain't what you know is who you know. Like, you got to keep those resources intact. You know, you do.
Yeah.
It means the world to you and them as well. You know, you just never know.
I think the thing that I realized the most out of my transition in that whole situation was just how little I knew and how much pride I had because I didn't want people to know. I'm serious. I'm like, pride is some stuff, dog. You will miss out on a lifetime of stuff because you got some pride about X, Y, or Z. So I used to have this pride and want to tell people, or I wanted to act like I knew everything all the time.
Confidence, what you're talking about. You're right.
But here's what you learn, that asking questions is the move. Like, asking questions is the move, dog. Like, that's the move.
No, that's right. All right.
But we sitting here thinking it's like a death sentence if you ask a question. Oh, don't ask no questions. No, man, you're supposed to ask a million questions a million times a day. That is a normal type of thing, man. People just got to explain themselves. My boss used to explain himself 1,000 times a day on these calls, bro, because everybody's like, oh, we didn't understand that. Or he'd be on a webinar. We'd be like, oh, what was that? It's nothing. That's part of it. But Dom, why do we walk around thinking that it's a negative connotation to ask a question or ask for help? Why is that?
Yeah, we it's a stigma. You know, it's a stigma because we feel lesser. And, you know, in our society, that's what we were deemed to feel is lesser, and not knowing stuff. So we feel like, oh, this guy got one up on me, or, you know, he's going to take advantage of me, or he doesn't respect me. And in our culture, respect is big, you know, while we, you know, floss and do all this stuff, respect is big. So we feel a little less respected if we ask a question that we may not know. We might feel like, oh, this dude is going to make fun of me. But what you're doing, brother, is your growth. There's growth and development here too. You know, there, that word learn, if you look it up, it means that I didn't know before now, but now I do. Now I learn. So if you don't understand how to learn, you know, you're beating yourself. You know, you're beating yourself. And again, it's maturity, right? You know, you talk to someone that's, you know, 65 years old and you tell him, hey, man, look, man, I'm developing in stages. And he's like, yeah, I've been where you've been at. He has been there. He had to make that decision a around those time, and when he was 21 and he was 19 and he was 35, it's the same thing we're going through. So, you know, we have to be cognizant of understanding that, you know, it's not wrong to educate yourself. It's actually your duty to do so.
Thank you. It's a duty.
I don't know what you don't know. I can't help you until you tell me how I can help you.
Facts.
So if you can ask some questions, you can use the resources that are out there for you that you don't know can help you, because you don't know what you need. You don't know what you want. You know, when I was running my business, I used to, you know, I used to take it personal because I was in my own grind, you know, and I wanted people around me that care for me to help me. Right. But instead of me understanding how they could help me or delegating exactly what I wanted them to do to help me, I wanted them to just get involved and figure it out. Just be part of this and you're going to figure out how to help me. And it was like, no, 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 you got to tell me what to do. And I'm like, I can't tell you what to do. I need you to learn. And it was like, wait a minute. You understand what I'm saying? No one can help you unless you understand what it is you're trying to do.
And ask, the assignment.
Asking questions clears that up because it gives you information and it allows you to make an informed decision. So, you know, we got to be better at that. You know, we just got to be better, open up and tuck that pride. That pride ain't going to do nothing for you. If you get busy and do what you do and do, like, you know what I'm saying? Like what you're doing and just get busy, that pride will go away.
It just, pride is like a momentary sense of gratification that validates maybe a feeling or behavior that you have that typically isn't positive. So it's like pride is always associated with like you validating some negative BS, you know what I'm saying? In your own mind.
Yes.
But then 98% of pride, I'm thinking that's what I think of it as. I don't really, the other 2%, obviously, but dude, it's a trip. And I'm glad that you're in a position though. Now, as head coach and Morningside High, my brother, to affect this next generation, to undo some of this mental conditioning that our generations have seen. So now hopefully that your kids and these kids that you affect or come into contact with at Morningside, man, they can go into the world equipped with these tools. You need them early on, 16, 17, 18. You need, for me, and this is kind of how I look at it, you need to be financially literate at 15, 16, 17. You need to understand about taxes, paying your taxes, voting and all that. You need to be on that. And then you got to understand about, you know, like retire. When you start working, what a 401k is, start thinking about Social Security, start thinking about retirement, start thinking about different things you can do. You know, it's like we as I won't say we, but I will say that a lot of Black culture in America is not equipped with this type of knowledge. And it always kind of contributes to why we don't move up vertically at the pace that we would all like to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a disconnect. It is. It is. You know, if we can figure out, you know, it's internal. A lot of this stuff is also internal.
Yeah, it is.
You know, we gotta do better.
That's it.
We gotta take responsibility. We do. And that's what we were talking about in the sports world with this alliance with kids and sports is, you know, until we figure that part out, we're not going to go up at that pace or that rate.
Right.
You know, but guys like you are in place with a voice and, you know, I'm glad you got me out there too. And each one teach one, you know, we are kind of the next generation. We do have. It's my home office.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. We're dog friendly over here.
All right, cool.
We're dog friendly at KJ Live, bro.
Hold on one second. He's not going to stop. Just one second.
Definitely dog friendly here at KJ Live. Have Dominic Ellison is in the building. Amazing conversation about the responsibility of mentors to the next generation. Dom played at Washington State, New Mexico State, worked in corporate America for 10 or 12 years and recently accepted the head coaching position at Morningside High School. We've had an incredible hour and change of conversation. Dom, man, I just want to tell you, I appreciate you for coming on this platform, brother, sharing your story. sharing the journey for those that are out there that are going to be listening that don't know who Dominic Ellison is. Now they can have a better idea, my brother.
Listen, man, I'm honored to be on the show. You know, for all the listeners, you know, Chris is a brother of mine. I got mad love and respect for Chris. We've been knowing each other for a very, very long time. I'm proud of his journey, man. He's always been like an incredible dude. He's always been an incredible brother. And when I'm not really a big social media dude, and you know, since I've taken this position, you know, obviously that comes with it, right? And the first opportunity that I saw you had a podcast, I had to reach out. And again, it's not about me. It's really about you, brother, because you've been a special dude in my life. You're my brother. So congratulations to you. I've always followed your journey. And you continue to inspire all of us, man. You always got something going on that we can respect and support. So
appreciate you.
Listeners, man, this is a one-of-a-kind dude, brother. So
I appreciate you, Dom. Man,
much love.
Much love, my brother, and best of luck at Morningside and anything else, my brother.
Yeah, we got to get you out to a game, man.
Oh, I'll be there. I'm going to come through, bro. I'm going to check it out.
I'm going to come to the Inglewood game. I'm going to come Morningside Inglewood. I'm going to wear a blue jacket.
There you go.
That's what I did back in the day. That's what I did back in the day, bro. But it was a different time, so I had to kind of hide. I was with Rico. I was sitting up at the top.
I'm up there hide. I had on the blue jacket, but I had like a sweatshirt over it. Like, nope.
Right. Well, now we walk you in. You're royalty. We walk you right in.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, Pops, I said hi, man. Hug Pops and hug the family, man. Hope everybody's well. And again, I appreciate you for having me, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dominic Ellison.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.